Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for Monday, September the 6th, 2021. This is Air Force veteran David Corey along with Richard Hurley. We have lots of news and information for veterans this evening, so I hope you'll stay tuned. And as everyone knows, we're approaching this Saturday, the 20th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks. So that's on a lot of veterans and Americans' minds this weekend. Before we get to the news that we have for you this evening, let's go over to Richard Hurley. Hello, Richard. How's it going?
Hey, David. Everything's going well. Hope everything's going well with you. Want to remind our listeners that this is a call-in show, so let us know what's on your mind as far as veterans' issues. You know, we don't have a guest tonight. We're going to be giving you a bunch of news. So this is a great time for you to call in and tell us about your particular situation going on with the VA. I'm sure you've got some interesting things that you could share with the rest of our listening audience. Tell them about your case. If you filed a case, maybe you're at the Board of Veteran Appeals, whatever your experience might be. We can all do, you know, everybody's experiences can help other veterans and even representatives, their lawyers, because it's a complicated field out there, veterans law. So any additional help is always welcome. Before we get to the news, you know, one of the things I wanted to kind of bring to everyone's attention is that at the Board of Veteran Appeals level, they've now hired an additional number of judges, and I think the total number is up to 113. I think there's like 20 new ones. And over the last couple of weeks, I've had the opportunity to actually have hearings with some of those new ones. And what I'm finding, just like in matrimonial court, which I did a lot of matrimonial work, I did a lot of criminal work, civil work, anytime you get a new judge, you're going to get, judges tend to be a little cautious. They tend to be a little bit more by the numbers, by the book. That doesn't mean that, you know, they're not going to help you out and do whatever they can to, you know, to help with your case, because the board, David and I have always said the board seems to be on point and really helping veterans in their claims. So I think you're still going to get that. But my point is that you might need to be a little bit more detailed. Not that you should not be detailed, but you just want to keep that in mind, because a lot of times we end up educating the judges about your case. And that's very important that we do that, especially for a new judge. And unfortunately, going into a hearing, you won't know prior to the hearing whether or not you've got a new judge or not. So if there's about 20 new ones and there's 113, that's like, I'm not a math person, but, you know, one-fifth probability that you could end up with one of these new judges. So you might want to be mindful of that. Talk to your representative, your lawyer, and tell them what we're talking about here tonight and how important it is that you might want to just go that extra step just in case you get a judge that's brand new. Like I said, I've had a few of them lately, and they've all been great, very helpful to me as the representative, and very friendly and helpful to the veteran. But you could also see that they were just that little, they were a little cautious because they don't want to do anything that's wrong as a judge, nor should they. So anyway, just wanted to kind of highlight that and pass that along and put that in your pipe and smoke it and see what happens. Back to you, David.
Thanks, Rick, for sharing that insight. We've got guests the next 3 weeks. Next week we're going to have Jeremy Senamaki from a group in Florida called Veterans Florida. He's going to talk about the programs that they offer, including jobs programs to help veterans. And because Florida has the third largest number of veterans in the country, I think it might be of interest not only to veterans that live in Florida, but veterans from other states to see what Florida's doing, because I think Florida, so many both state organizations, county organizations, nonprofit, private organizations, there's a lot going on for veterans in this state. And then on the 20th, we're going to have a return guest, John Rotter, who's from the American Legion headquarters. He's going to be bringing us up to speed on what the American Legion's been doing, their recent convention, and the programs that they're currently involved in. And then on the 27th of this month, we're going to have Jeremy Butler, another return guest. He is the CEO of IAVA, the Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America organization, which, as veterans, particularly those that served in Afghanistan, it's been pretty tough watching the events, how the Taliban basically took over the country so quickly, and the chaos and the American departure. I think it's causing more stress, and IAVA and other groups have recognized this and are trying to publicize the resources for veterans that might be dealing with even more stress of watching these things and feeling that perhaps their sacrifices and the lives of their friends that were lost over there is causing them more mental anguish and turmoil and stress. So those are our guests for the next 3 weeks. Jumping ahead to October, on the 11th, we have two guests from an organization in California called Swords to Plowshares, which does a lot for veterans on many issues, far beyond just disability compensation benefits, but also housing, jobs, and many other things. So we'll have two guests on the 11th. And we've got some other guests we're waiting to hear back to work out some days that's convenient. But let's jump into some news here. I'm going to start off with a September 2nd, 2021, that's last Thursday's, press release from the National Veterans Legal Services Program, the NVLSP. This will be of interest to literally tens of thousands of veterans who were previously forced to pay out-of-pocket emergency medical expenses, which the VA should have paid for. We've covered this story periodically over the past year or so, and this is the most recent development. Last Wednesday, September the 1st, 2021, the United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims ordered the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to provide additional measures of transparency in its ongoing re-adjudications and payments to tens of thousands of veterans who are entitled to reimbursement of emergency medical expenses. This is stemming from a class action lawsuit called Wolf versus McDonough. The appellate court ordered the VA to provide copies of its re-adjudication decisions to the National Veterans Legal Services Program, NVLSP, as well as to the pro bono counsel at the law firm of Sidley Austin, LLP, who together worked as counsel for the class of veterans who had applied to the VA for reimbursement of their emergency medical expenses incurred at non-VA facilities that were not covered by veterans' private insurance. Now, the VA also must provide an explanation of its efforts to find veterans who were owed reimbursement, but who the VA claims it has been unable to locate. A special master in the case found that these measures are necessary because of the VA's ongoing errors and misreporting of its compliance with the CAVC's, that's the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, 2019 and 2020 decisions, which struck down VA regulations which had denied veterans reimbursement of these emergency medical expenses, and ordering the VA to re-adjudicate its previous denials of the class members' claims. It found that there were pervasive errors in the VA's previous status reports to class counsel, as explained by the special master, the Honorable Thomas B. Griffith. Quote, combined with the evidence that many veterans whom the VA reports as having all claims adjudicated have received no contact from the VA at all, let alone payment where appropriate, that's sufficient to rebut the presumption of regularity that the VA is complying with the court's actions. I don't know, Rick, but it sounds to me like the VA was misrepresenting you know, the veterans that it had actually reached and paid. So I'm glad the court is on top of this issue. The CAVC adopted the special master's report and recommendation, explaining that the newly required transparency into VA's re-adjudication process is, quote, designed to implement the relief we have previously ordered and to allow class counsel to effectively monitor compliance with our order, unquote. The VA will have to provide this additional information to NVLSP, starting with its next scheduled status report due in October. According to Paul Wright, who's the executive director of the National Veterans Legal Services Program, quote, the CAVC's order will help ensure that no veteran is left behind in VA's re-adjudications of reimbursement claims. The tens of thousands of veterans whose reimbursement claims were wrongly denied deserve no less. We appreciate the court's recognition that, as class counsel, we require accurate information to ensure the VA fixes its wrongful handling of veterans' claims, unquote. Now, based on the VA's past estimate, in addition to the tens of thousands of veterans that are already, that should already be paid reimbursement for what they paid out of pocket, compliance with this Wolf class action lawsuit is expected to require the VA to pay in anywhere in the range of $1.8 billion to $6.5 billion in reimbursement. What I was discussing just before I was disconnected was that literally hundreds of thousands of veterans are projected to be affected by this class action lawsuit, Wolf versus McDonough. So stay tuned. We'll continue to keep everyone updated on this issue. And just as a side note, this class of veterans, thousands of veterans, is represented both by the National Veterans Legal Services Program as well as pro bono. In other words, free legal representation from the law firm of Sidley Austin, LLP. The NVLSP, National Veterans Legal Services Program, I'm a big fan of theirs for decades. Their website is nvlsp.org, nvlsp.org. They're an independent nonprofit veteran service organization that served active duty military personnel and veterans since 1981. Its goal is to ensure that the nation honors its commitments to its 22 million veterans and active duty personnel by ensuring they have the benefits they've earned through their service. NVLSP has represented veterans in lawsuits that compel enforcement of the law where the VA or other military services denied benefits to veterans in violation of the law. NVLSP's success in these lawsuits have resulted in more than $5.2 billion being awarded in disability, death, medical benefits to hundreds of thousands of veterans and their survivors. NVLSP offers training to attorneys and other advocates. They connect veterans and active duty personnel with pro bono legal help when seeking legal disability benefits. They publish the nation's definitive guide on veterans benefits, the Veterans Benefits Manual, and they represent and litigate for veterans and their families. I would add, not just individual cases, which is very important, but also in some of the most significant class action lawsuits over the last few decades. They also are involved with military discharge review agencies and as well as all the federal courts. Again, their website is nvlsp.org. I encourage our listeners to check out their website because they'll have more information on all their class action lawsuits as well as other resources. So, okay, Rick, over to you.
Well, in other news, as we have reported periodically over the past several months, earlier this year, the VA added bladder cancer, Parkinson's ism, and hypothyroidism to the list of illnesses it acknowledges were caused by Agent Orange exposure in Southeast Asia. The VA also will review and pay retroactive benefits to veterans and survivors whose VA disability and death benefit claims for the three diseases were previously denied without requiring them to refile their claims. Department of Veteran Affairs announced in a May 27, 2021 press release that it will begin implementing provisions of the William M. Thornberry National Defense Authorization Act for fiscal year 2021 adding those three conditions, bladder cancer, hypothyroidism, and Parkinsonism, to the list of those presumptively associated with exposure to herbicide agents, more commonly known as Agent Orange. Secretary Dennis McDonough said many of our nation's veterans have waited a long time for these benefits. VA will not make them wait any longer. This is absolutely the right thing to do for veterans and their families. The VA will apply provisions of court orders related to the case of NEMA versus U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, which may result in an earlier date for entitlement to benefits for veterans who served in the Republic of Vietnam during the Vietnam War. Vietnam War era veterans and their survivors who previously filed were denied benefits for one of these three new presumptive conditions will have their cases automatically reviewed without the need to refile a claim. The VA will send letters to impacted veterans and survivors. And I wonder, David, on that, in the past, we may have had claims as well that we filed and for obvious reasons were denied. I wonder if they're going to, if the VA is going to reach out to us since our representation letter might still be in effect.
Well, one would hope so, but if that other issue that I was discussing is any indication of how the VA may operate in this situation, you know, where they were ordered to reimburse veterans for their out-of-pocket medical expenses, but they've claimed to have reached out to veterans who never heard from them, claimed to have paid veterans who never received money, it's probably a good thing for both veterans and their representatives to proactively reach out to the VA to remind them that there was a claim that was denied and find out, just ensure that the VA is actually going to act on it, because otherwise it could easily, you know, things slip through the cracks with the VA. They've got so many cases and
they don't like to pay money.
No, but we've also seen a historic problem with the VA mail system. You know,
yep.
I routinely get letters that are dated, you know, 3-4 weeks before they arrive, and this shouldn't be happening. I mean, during COVID, the mail did get slowed up, but even before COVID, you know, last year, but now. I routinely get letters weeks after they're dated. And the funny thing, not in a humorous way, but the unfortunate thing is when the VA uses the U.S. Postal Service, their envelopes are not postmarked because they're U.S. government. They don't put a postmark on it. So you can never see what day they actually hit the U.S. mail system. But they'll send a letter saying, you know, dated August the 4th, saying you've got 30 days from the day of this letter, and you get the letter September the 5th. You know, you're already past the 30 days. And I think the best thing to do is to follow that up with a letter to the VA that goes into the file saying, by the way, your letter was dated here, but we didn't get it until this date. So just start documenting this sort of thing, because the VA will come back and say, well, you missed your 30 days. We went ahead and made a decision. And that's separate from the problem of sometimes not even sending a copy to the representative, or sending a copy to the representative but not the veteran, or the veteran not the representative. It's,
I just had a client, and I hadn't received the letter yet. And I think the letter was dated August the 4th. She just received hers, and I think it was like August 26th, 27th, with, as you just said, a 30-day time period to do something, file something. I think it was 38 U.S.C. Section 5103, notice response. And, you know, she called up. She was in a panic. And then I said, send me a copy of yours, email it to me, and I'll get it in. Don't worry about it. But, yeah, I mean, what you're saying, David, is so true that, imagine a veteran who doesn't have a representative and gets a letter 3-4 weeks after the postmark, date of the letter.
Well, it's not postmark. I mean, the envelope.
No, I'm saying the date of the letter. The date of the letter.
Yeah.
And now they get this and they're like, you know, they're panicking. What do I do? What do I do? You know, and it's just bad practice.
Well, that's what, like I say. What my practice is to respond to that by saying, by the way, your letter was dated this date. Your envelope wasn't postmarked, but it was received on this date. Just a document, so if something
right.
goes in the file, so when someone reads it later,
right.
that
that's
they
what
realize.
I do.
Yeah, no, I know you do it, but it's just our listeners might appreciate the importance of just documenting things, because otherwise someone will look at the record later and it'll appear like, well, you know, we sent the letter, and they'll presume you got it, and that's the VA. They're just
And here's another important point, because I hear this quite a bit. Some veterans look at receiving letters from the VA, like a lot of people, when they receive letters from the IRS, you don't want to open it up because you're thinking that there's no good news in there. But this is another important reason why you need to open it up right away, because if as David and I are talking about right now, you've got a letter that's dated 3 or 4 weeks prior to you receiving the letter, and there is a 30-day deadline. You need to take action right away. And if you're going to let your VA mail sit on the mantle, collecting dust, hoping that there's not any bad news in there, you got to be proactive. Open the mail right away, and take action, whatever action that might be. So. You got some more news there, David?
Yeah, and this is related to, Rick, what you were discussing about Agent Orange and the three new conditions, bladder cancer, hypothyroidism, and Parkinsonism. In response to the VA announcing that, back in June, the American Legion said that it welcomed that good news, but it expressed disappointment that I think many other veteran groups and veterans of Vietnam share, which is the VA did not include high blood pressure on that roster of presumptive conditions. Ralph Bazzella, who's the chairman of the American Legion's Veterans Affairs and Rehabilitation Commission, said, and I quote, "We've been advocating for this for several years. There's enough scientific evidence to prove there's a connection between Agent Orange exposure and these illnesses," unquote. According to the American Legion, the VA long refused to grant presumptive service connection for that until Congress mandated for those other diseases the lone exception on the hypertension issue in recent years was former VA Secretary David Shulkin, who's now, you know, been out of office for a number of years. He acknowledged the link between Agent Orange and hypertension, but the Office of Management and Budget refused to allow him to grant Vietnam veterans that presumptive service connection. So Ralph Bazzella from the American Legion said, quote, "We had to go to legislation to get these three new presumptives done. It may have to do that for hypertension," unquote. I expect that's probably the case. The American Legion has long supported establishing presumptive conditions for Agent Orange exposure and sponsored a 1982, which shows you how long this issue has been fought, a Columbia University study that provided the scientific basis for the first Agent Orange presumptions granted by the VA. American Legion will continue to fight to have the VA grant presumptive service connection for Vietnam veterans with hypertension. The VA said ischemic heart disease is connected to Agent Orange exposure in 2010, said Ralph Bazzella, who served with the Army Infantry in Vietnam from 71 to 72. Hypertension and ischemic heart disease go hand in hand, and VA needs to be respectfully reminded that you don't need to wait for the law to do this, unquote. And Ricky reminds me, I had a BVA hearing last week in which the veteran, who is now deceased, had ischemic heart disease, which should, under the presumptive, be easily connected because he was in the Blue Water Navy category. And as you know, the law changed fairly recently. It didn't change back in 2010 for the Blue Water Navy. But in his case, there was also evidence of hypertension going back to the military service. And even though hypertension is not on the list, as the American Legion press release discusses, there is certainly scientific evidence out there which shows a connection, and therefore advocates need to keep that issue alive, you know, on appeals, because you know the VA is going to be denying it, and if one option would be to try to find an expert that might make that connection, and there are some out there that would, but that costs money, and the other option is to continue litigating, citing the National Academy's report from 2018, and keep that issue alive, and then hopefully, as the American Legion has said, hopefully there'll be some legislation to do that. Now, as far as these three new presumptions that you mentioned, Rick, they'll potentially affect 52,000 veterans and 2,000 survivors who are already receiving some type of benefit, and 19,000 veterans and 6,000 survivors whose previous bladder cancer, hypothyroidism, and Parkinson's claims were denied. They should receive retroactive benefits. So that's good news. The National Veterans Legal Services Program applauded VA Secretary Dennis McDonough's decision to reconsider claims for those three illnesses that were previously rejected. Bart Stichman, executive director of NVLSP, said, quote, "This is a momentous decision, and we hope the VA will expeditiously identify and pay those who were previously denied benefits for these decisions," unquote. The VA is required to review previously denied claims and provide retroactive Agent Orange benefits under a 1991 consent decree that arose from a class action lawsuit brought by NVLSP, the case you mentioned, Rick, Niemer versus U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. And the VA has fought whether diseases were part of the consent decree in the past, according to Bart Stichman. The NVLSP has gone to court four times since 1999 to force VA to comply with the Niemer consent decree, including a motion filed in federal court last July 2020, on behalf of Blue Water Navy veteran, Navy Vietnam veterans and survivors whose Agent Orange claims were denied. The U.S. District Court for the Northern District of California ruled in favor of veterans and their families in November. So as you can see, it's an ongoing battle, essentially, to hold the VA's feet to the fire on these issues. And fortunately, NVLSP and some other nationwide groups, you know, through the use of class actions, they can bring pressure on the VA through the courts. Rick, over to you.
You know, this is just more examples of the hard-headedness of the VA and the line that they draw when it comes to handling veterans' claims. And, you know,
yeah, that's for sure.
You know, there's a huge issue when it comes to retro payments, and the VA doesn't like to pay retro payments, and they will do whatever they can to avoid having to pay a significant retro payment. And what I'm finding these days is they're taking certain actions that just continue to drag the litigation along, rather than just concede and pay the retro payment to the veteran. They want to continue to drag it along, and I don't know, maybe they're thinking the veteran's going to pass away, which isn't going to alleviate them from having to pay it, but for whatever reason, they don't just step up there and pay those retros, and they're always trying to find a little angle that they can hang their hat on to avoid having to pay that. Maybe they're thinking that the veteran will get so frustrated he won't even pursue it. I don't know, but it's a problem, and it's very unsettling for me, because it's just I think it's disgraceful, considering what these men and women have done in terms of their line of service. In more big news, for thousands of veterans suffering from certain respiratory conditions, the Department of Veteran Affairs began processing disability claims August 2nd, 2021, for asthma, retinitis, and sinusitis on a presumptive basis based on presumed particulate matter exposures during military service in Southwest Asia and certain other areas. If these conditions manifested within 10 years of a qualifying period of military service, the VA conducted the first part of a newly formed internal VA process to review scientific evidence to support rulemaking, resulting in the recommendation to consider creation of new presumptions of service connection for respiratory conditions based on VA's evaluation of a National Academies of Science engineering and medicine report, and other evidence. The process concluded that particulate matter pollution is associated with chronic asthma, retinitis, and sinusitis for veterans who served in Southwest Asia Theater of Operations beginning August 2, 1990 to the present, or Afghanistan, Uzbekistan, Syria, Djibouti beginning September 19, 2001 to the present. VA's review also concluded that there was sufficient evidence to presume that these veterans have been exposed to particulate matter. I announced my intention to initiate rulemaking on May 27th to consider adding respiratory conditions to the list of chronic disabilities, told Dennis McDonough, Secretary of Veteran Affairs. He says, through this process, I determined that the evidence provided was sufficient to establish presumption of service connection for these three respiratory conditions. This is the right decision, and the VA will continue to use holistic approach in determining toxic exposure presumptions moving forward. Well, that's a breath of fresh air right there. I like when he says, this is the right decision. Darn right.
Well, it's a good step in the right direction, but I think most veteran groups and veterans will acknowledge it doesn't go far enough, and it's sort of throwing a bone to the veterans because those three conditions, I'm not minimizing the effects of asthma or rhinitis or sinusitis, but for a lot of veterans, at least rhinitis and sinusitis, they are not the most serious of the respiratory conditions and diseases and cancers that a lot of veterans have suffered from open-air burn pits, but other exposures over in Southwest Asia. You know, bronchiolitis is one, various types of cancers, you know, that we've reported for the last 4 years, you know, particularly associated with open-air burn pits. Now, this current rule is not limited to open-air burn pits, and to that, that's great news. But I think the VA is kind of throwing a bone, saying, okay, we've done something here. Here are three conditions, which typically are going to be relatively low-rated, you know, and they don't include any of the cancers. They don't include really some of the more serious, essentially terminal conditions. So there's a lot more to be done on this issue. As far as the scope, the Southwest Asia Theater of Operations refers to Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, the neutral zone between Iraq and Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, the United Arab Emirates, Oman, the Gulf of Aden, Gulf of Oman, the Persian Gulf, the Arabian Sea, the Red Sea, and the airspace above those locations. The VA has said that it will conduct outreach to affected veterans and survivors to inform them of their eligibility and will provide information on how to apply. Now, I don't know how thorough their efforts will be, but I've had a couple of veterans that I've helped already receive letters from the VA informing them about this change in the rule and essentially letting them know what they need to do to file a claim, you know, what forms to file, which is the 21-526-EZ if it's a claim for the first time. If they're reapplying for a condition that had been denied, then they use the VA Form 20-0995. And this is all on the VA's website now. For more information on these presumptive conditions, the VA has a website on airborne hazards and burn pit exposures under the public health section of va.gov. And the website is publichealth.va.gov/exposures/burn pits. And then you can find out more about that. You can also contact a Veteran Service Organization or an accredited attorney or agent for help with that. Now, of course, many veterans are concerned about their exposure, as I said, to all sorts of airborne hazards. According to the VA's website, publichealth.va.gov, quote, airborne hazards refer to any sort of contaminant or potentially toxic substance that we are exposed to through the air we breathe. While on active duty, military service members may have been exposed to a variety of airborne hazards, including the smoke and fumes from open burn pits, sand, dust, and particulate matter, general air pollution common in certain countries that are far below the standards of air quality we're used to in the United States, fuel, aircraft exhaust, and other mechanical fumes, and smoke from oil well fires, which is very common at the end of the first Gulf War in 1991. The VA claims that it understands that many veterans are especially concerned about exposure to the smoke and fumes generated by open burn pits. We've reported on many shows over the last 4 years. In Iraq, Afghanistan, and other areas of the Southwest Asia Theater of Military Operations, open-air combustion of trash and other waste and burn pits was a common practice. Supposedly, the DOD has now closed out most burn pits, but that suggests there are still some that are in operation, and the DOD is planning to close those at some point. Depending on a variety of factors, veterans may experience health effects related to that exposure. The factors that may indicate a person has greater or lesser risk of short-term or long-term health effects include what was burnt, the type of waste burnt, the proximity of the person to the burn pits, the amount of time and the frequency of exposure, wind direction, other weather-related factors, and the presence of other airborne environmental hazards in the area. Rick, I know we've talked about this many times over the years, and we've both seen that documentary film, Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. And in that film, you know, they showed video that were taken from some of the soldiers there at the time, which showed dark clouds, essentially, of fog level, ground level smoke in some areas. And these burn pits were often the size of many football fields. They were burning 24 hours a day. They were burning every type of waste you can imagine. And they were fueled by jet fuel to keep them burning. And so they were burning everything. And these veterans had no choice because they were working within close proximity of this smoke. So hopefully the VA will get to the point sooner rather than later where they go through and they add a much longer list than just the three that you mentioned, you know, asthma, rhinitis, and sinusitis, to the presumptive list, and not make the veterans wait decades like they did for the Vietnam vets. So, Rick, your thoughts?
No, just kind of... Excuse me, what you said and what we've been talking about for the last 4 years. I think if anybody wants to take the time to go out and watch that film, because until you see it, you really can't appreciate what these dark clouds that are filled with all this toxic stuff looks like, and how humongous it is. You know, I know, you know, our friend Lauren Price, who recently passed away, she was on the show, and you know, she would try to give us a really good description of it, and you know, the fact that you'd be in this for days, you know, just you couldn't see in front of you, and you know, and what you're in is toxic. You know, that's what everyone has to understand. You know, you're not in a rain cloud. You're not, you know, driving down I-75 in Florida, and you can't see because the rain's, you know, coming down so tough, and you can't see. This is, you can't see, and you're in toxic stuff. It's poison, and
right.
And you're just exposed to it, and it's a problem. It's a huge problem, and you know it's not going to get. You know, those who were exposed to it, you know, it's going to take, over time, we're going to see more and more of their health issues. You know, we know Lauren Price passed away, and it's just unfortunate. You know, it'd just be nice for our government to take responsibility like they eventually did with Agent Orange and eventually did with Camp Lejeune, even though we still got problems there, to step up and really take care of our veterans who were exposed to this. This stuff. In other news, go ahead.
No, it just shows that there's this mentality among many in Washington that people are expendable. And, you know, in the military, when they need you, you're expected to give 100%. When you're no longer able to do that, you know, and you're out or they're in the process of medically discharging you, you know, then you're dropped. you're dropped like a hot potato, basically. And I think you, if it wasn't for the fact that there are a lot of veteran groups that put pressure on Congress and the VA, they'd do nothing, really. That's what it would be like. What you see with the modern VA, which is a huge improvement over the VA that Vietnam veterans and World War II veterans came home to, it's the result of work of a lot of people, a lot of veterans and veteran organizations, large and small. I mean, you can amazed at the power of just a few people, you know, like Lauren Price's group, Veteran Warriors, not just on that issue, but also the issue of the VA caregiver support program. But that's what it takes, people getting involved, and it's usually the ones that have been effective and that have been forgotten by the VA. But as you'll see in that film, it's called Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How American Poisoned Its Soldier. And it's about a 55-minute documentary produced by Greg Lovett. You can find it through Facebook. Just search for Burn Pit documentary. You can find trailers to it on YouTube, and you can in any event, in that film, Rick, another thing that made an impression to me was they interviewed a number of doctors, including a doctor, I think it was at Vanderbilt, that a civilian doctor, not a military doctor, but that the military sent a lot of veterans to because they couldn't figure out why these healthy young men and women who were in their 20s, who had deployed over to Iraq and Afghanistan in good health, or else they would not have deployed in the first place. You know, you have to be medically cleared to be able to deploy. They went over there in good health, good respiratory condition, good fitness, you know, and they come back with these respiratory symptoms that the military was unable to diagnose, and that's because they weren't doing the right tests. They had to do biopsies to find out exactly what was going on, and that's where this doctor, his name slips my mind, but he was interviewed in the film, and he talked about this, you know, the bronchiolitis and some of these other conditions, and there's no other explanation for all these veterans. The common thread was they were all stationed around these open burn pits. And as you described, you know, these things are burning, they're, you know, 24 hours a day, every day. It would be like living in a neighborhood, okay, and on your street having a half a dozen houses on fire 24 hours a day, and the fire's never put out, and the wind's just blowing all the smoke into your yard, and you're breathing it. That's what it would be like. So, any event, we'll keep following the issue. So, Rick, you got some news about VA program for homeless.
Yeah, the Department of Veteran Affairs announced it has expanded the so-called shallow subsidy initiative and will grant $200 million to 238 nonprofit organizations across the country and territories to provide housing, rental assistance to extremely and very low-income veteran households eligible under VA's Supported Services for Veterans Families program. The initiative, funded by the American Rescue Plan, is now available in every state, District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, and Guam, and promotes long-term housing stability by providing rental assistance payments directly to landlords on behalf of eligible veterans' households for up to 2 years. VA's shallow subsidy initiative is a vital tool in addressing the widening gap between income and rising housing costs, said VA Secretary Dennis McDonough. He says the recent expansion enables the VA to provide relief to many more veterans burdened by high housing rental costs while they attempt to increase their incomes by pursuing training or better employment opportunities. The SSVF shallow subsidy initiative covers 35% of eligible veterans' rent for 2 years without the risk of subsidy decreasing if the veterans' income increases during the two-year period. The purpose is to incentivize veterans to increase their income through employment or other means. The initiative also works closely with the Labor Department's Homeless Veterans Reintegration Program to help veterans secure employment. There are 7.2 million more affordable housing units needed for low-income families, according to data published by the National Low-Income Housing Coalition, highlighting the need for this VA initiative, particularly in communities with high rental costs and low housing rental vacancy rates. The shallow subsidy initiative aligns with the White House's priority to promote housing stability by supporting vulnerable tenants and preventing foreclosures. Learn more about the VA's mission to end veteran homelessness and how you can help. Go to veterans. Go to the website at va.gov/homeless. Over to you, David.
Okay, and more VA news. The VA announced this past Thursday, September the 2nd, 2021, that in conjunction with Suicide Prevention Month, which is September, the Department of Veteran Affairs is launching a program called Reach Out, a new campaign that raises awareness of the mental health resources available for veterans, of which there are many, and which we plug every week on this show at the end. Timely, evidence-based suicide prevention public service announcements on firearm safe storage have been released as the 20th anniversary of 9/11 approaches, and the recent events in Afghanistan spark an array of emotions along with other stressors for many veterans. According to the VA's press release, this Reach Out program emphasizes the importance of not waiting for a crisis to happen by acting now to help veterans. And in addition to reaching out with the critical actions that can help save a life, being prepared, finding resources, and help spreading the word are all part of it. The messaging ensures that veterans, their families, friends, and caregivers know they're not alone, and it only takes a moment to reach out and ask for help. The VA's Suicide Prevention Month campaign encourages veterans who might be going through a challenging time to reach out for support. And there's a lot of things that can be done. Reaching out to family, friends, and the VA, calling or texting a friend or a fellow veteran to talk about what they're going through. The VA has a lot of resources on its website. They have a Make the Connection program where more than 600 veterans and family members share their stories of strength and recovery. They have a toll-free number. It's MyVA411, which is 1-800-698-2411. That's 1-800-698-2411 to easily access information on VA benefits and services. So there's just a ton of information for these resources that can help veterans. Another related to the importance of suicide prevention is the issue of substance abuse. And the VA, in conjunction with the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration's Behavioral Health and Treatment Services, they have a website. It's you can use confidentially, and you can search by zip code to find local treatment facilities that focus on substance abuse, addiction, and other mental health issues, which I've referred some of the veterans I've helped to this website so they could find some rehab programs in their area. And the website is findtreatment.samhsa.gov. Let me give that to you again, because this it's the website of the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, Behavioral Treatment Services. The website is findtreatment.samhsa.gov. For more information, you can also go to the website reach.gov/SPM. That's reach.gov/SPM. So a lot of resources out there for veterans that are in a crisis, for homeless veterans, for veterans and their families that are affected by substance abuse, other mental health issues. So there's a lot of resources. It's a shame if they're not used, so that's why we help publicize them. So, Rick, over to you.
I think there are so many resources. You hit the nail right on the head there, David. There are so many resources out there that it's almost endless, and I can see where a lot of people could get lost in trying to find all of them. But you got to keep looking, because if you're down and out and you need some help, the help's there. I guess we're ready for the coaching and the care.
Yeah.
Our coaching and the care program, we like to promote this every week. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching and the care offers free coaching to help you help your veteran. give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. The hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, the VA's coaching and the care number is 1-888-823-7458. I also want to remind everybody that the VA has the VA hotline, the crisis line, and that number is 1-800-273-8255, and press 1. And if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, please call that that number. Again, that's 1-800-273-8255, and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. On that note, David, I saw something, and I really, it was in passing. I think I saw it on TV in PBS station. And they said there were actually more deaths caused by suicide of Afghanistan veterans than those who died in Afghanistan.
That wouldn't surprise me. Yeah.
No, I was horrified when I saw that. But I think the numbers at 2,500 and more, as far as those who died in Afghanistan. But that's just an appalling number. For suicides, I'm talking.
Yeah, well, I don't think most people appreciate the psychological impact of service in war. I mean, we see it all the time in veterans that we help, I think most Americans that are disconnected from the military. If they're in the military and they're a family member, then they know, you know, what we're talking about here. But I think most Americans, because they're so isolated from the military now, you know, it's like after 9/11, the professional military was sent off to take care of it, and as the Secretary of Defense at the time said, you know, you go to war with the military you have and the equipment you have. Well, that's not always one that you'd want to have or that you're fully prepared to. But what happened, Rick, like you and I have seen with many veterans, many of them deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan over the last 20 years, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 times, you know, and that takes a huge toll on them. And they may have been suffering from post-traumatic stress after the first deployment, but the pressures of service, peer pressure, lack of proper military care, lots of factors weigh in that they would continue going back, you know, deployment after deployment. And they come back, and they're not the same person that left. And that's part of what has, you know, resulted in this the suicide rate and many other problems, so it's an ongoing issue. So, okay, well, we're about out of time here. Just want to make another reminder. Our guest next week will be Jeremy Sinamaki from a great organization called Veterans Florida. So tune in and find out what they're doing. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank Corey and Hurley Law Group, the sponsor of this program. And thank Doug Newsom, who's our producer here at BBS Radio. Hope you'll tune in next week, same time, same stage, for another edition of the show. Until then, stay safe and stay healthy. Hope you have a great week.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on bbsradio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.